Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Accelerate Your Business Growth,
where we're exploring all sorts of business topics. Experts from around the world join me, your host, Diane Helbig, for a conversation where they share their expertise with all of you. Take what you need when you need it. Featured on Inc.com, Forbes, and MSNBC's Your Business, this podcast is recognized as one of the best podcasts for small business, sales, leadership, social media, and more. When it comes to business, Accelerate Your Business Growth has got it covered. And now on with the show. Today, I am thrilled to have two guests. I have David Henken and Thomas Bertels. David is an accomplished executive and entrepreneur with a proven record of success in prominent global companies as well as startups. Thomas is the president and founder of Purpose Works, a management consulting firm on a mission to make work more productive, valuable, meaningful, and impactful. They are the co-authors of the book, Fixing Work, A Tale About Designing Jobs Employees Love. Thanks so much for joining me today, you guys.
Glad to be here.
Thrilled to have you here. Now, we are hearing an awful lot of this about how employees are burnt out and they're unmotivated. So what's going on out there?
Well, maybe, you know, really appreciate being here. Maybe just to offer, you know, the main idea of the book is that in many organizations, work itself is broken. Yeah. And there is a way to fix it. And by work being broken, one of the fundamental causes is that when most managers and leaders make decisions about how work gets done, they don't think about what we as humans want from work, meaning, autonomy, feedback. You know, can we think of employees themselves as customers of the work? We generally don't.
You know, that is so great. I did a program for Penn State Stark, I think last year, maybe the year before. And the title of it was, What If Employees Were Customers? So, you know, it's the exact same thought. We'd hopefully be treating the whole situation differently. So I'm curious.
And it goes very well, better than me. You know, this is not a new idea. It goes back decades.
Yeah.
You know, Herbert Hertzberg and Douglas McGregor, Richard Hackman and Greg Goldman, I mean, these ideas are so relevant today. Especially with, you know, gig work and AI, and you know, more and more people are becoming knowledge workers. It's right. Even more relevant today than it was in the past.
Okay, but so let's talk about this. Let's talk about this, about that, but also hybrid and remote work, because that those two things have really changed jobs. So, talk to me about like the pros and cons of working that way as opposed to how we worked before the pandemic.
Well, I think there's a couple of things, right? I mean, one is I think the pandemic definitely has given people, since we all, you know, got to work remotely, I think there's the sense of autonomy and freedom, and that's become very difficult for companies to pull back, right? So I think in a lot of ways, it's kind of like a little bit like trying to get the toothpaste back into the tube, and it just doesn't work, right? So I think some elements of this are definitely here to stay. I think our point is, in general, whether work is remote or in person in the office, I think most leaders really don't spend enough time thinking about how the work itself is structured so that people can experience the work as intrinsically motivating. And that actually becomes even more important when people work remotely. And, you know, the reality, I think, in most organizations is that we've broken workflows and processes into small bits and pieces.
Yeah.
And so that makes it really, really hard, I think, for employees to get a sense of meaning and satisfaction out of the work, because they don't see, right, the final customer of the work. They don't have a sense for how important the outcome is that they're working on. And so, especially with remote work, I think it's even more critical to redesign the work so, right, when people are not in the office, they can be effective. And when they're together in a hybrid setting, right, they can actually use the time to do, you know, what people do best together, which is, you know, be creative, find solutions versus processing transactions.
Okay. Will you talk, I mean, I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, okay, how do leaders go about making the work meaningful?
I think there's a couple of ways you can do that. One is, I think, put the work back together, right? So give people broader jobs where they actually own the work product from start to finish, and also, right, which also allows them hopefully to bring different skills to bear, not just a narrow set. I think the second piece is really connecting people to the customer of the work. So create, like, you know, a direct line of sight to the customer and opening up those feedback channels. Those are, I think, two steps that probably in most organizations leaders could take to help employees experience the work as more meaningful.
Yeah, that's interesting.
A little bit. I've sat in a lot of boardrooms for many organizations. There are so many competing priorities. What makes this different is, firstly, it really is a triple win. Employees, customers, and the company all benefit. It has internal and external value from day one, thinking about work less mechanistically and more humanistically. We're always competing for scarce resources. Most firms acknowledge that people are the most important asset, and this simply extends that priority in the highest leverage ways.
Okay, that makes sense to me. And as you were saying that, I was thinking, okay, so most leaders are so focused on the dollars, right, on the bottom line. So how, I mean, I'm assuming, like, there's case studies of this about how working this way, putting the work back together and making it more, a deeper involvement in the work helps. What have you seen as far as what that actual benefit to the bottom line and the company is?
Well, I think there's a couple of areas where one can look. I mean, one is on the people side, organizations that have adopted that see turnover drop to next to nothing. And employee engagement tends to go way up. And we all know that employee engagement is highly correlated with productivity. So you get less turnover, you get more engaged employees. You also get more satisfied customers, right? To David's point, I think, you know, as we redesign the work and create those connections, I think, you know, customers also want to have, right, their problems addressed. And so, like, nobody likes to be handed over from one, right, call center representative to another. So customers are also happy. And the other piece is it's oftentimes really more cost effective, because when you design the work well, employees can actually self-manage to a significant degree. So when they got a clear task, when they got all the tools at their disposal, when they own the whole thing from start to finish, it's much easier for them to be accountable, and they also tend to be way more productive.
And managers, just to add, managers, you know, actually benefit from well-designed work. I think just to build on what Tom is saying, at least as much as employees, because they have to do less tracking, less planning, less checking, less reviewing. But it's a different leadership model. It moves more towards indirect control.
Yeah, I love that. That is so interesting. I hadn't thought of that there's less moving parts, less to keep track of. That's interesting. And what I'm hearing you say is that then people really have more ownership of the work they're doing because they're sort of doing it from start to finish as opposed to doing one part and sending it down the line.
Absolutely.
Huh.
You know, a typical example I sometimes think about is, you know, in a startup, you know, you often, you know, they're fascinating because, you know, more often everyone's kind of in the same room or in the same area, you know, the typical garage example, and everybody knows what the purpose is. The cash cow isn't there to protect yet. You know, the feedback from the work itself and the meaning is more self-evident. When firms get large enough to start splitting the work into departments, you know, moving part of the work upstairs or downstairs or across the globe, we start replicating job descriptions, engagement drops, outcomes suffer. we really think the book is here to answer those questions and those challenges.
Yeah, that is great. It reminds me of this feeling that everything is siloed, that these parts of the business aren't really working together as effectively as they could, right?
Yeah, and you typically see that I was yesterday, right, working with a client, and they're talking about like the issues that they have, and then they use the term, they create these problems, and they tends to be, right, the department next door. Uh-huh. And so I think it's really easy, I think, when work is so fragmented, for people to think within their function, within their department, and it really, right, breaks like the cross-functional workflows and really makes it very difficult for people to have the sense of accountability. And oftentimes also the incentives are, misaligned, right? People are being pulled in a certain direction versus like work together, hands in glove to create an outcome for a customer.
Right. Is there a role that technology can play in helping motivate employees?
Yeah, I think one element is actually probably less technology. One aspect of, I think, good work design is to allow people to do deep work, which is especially important when it comes to knowledge work. And in today's workplaces, actually, technology oftentimes distracts people from doing that, right? There's endless emails that people send to each other. There's Slack channels. So there's all these things that really distract people and takes their attention away from the task. So oftentimes one answer is actually less technology. But then if you think about AI and topics like that, right, actually technology, especially artificial intelligence, I think offers the opportunity to really give people the tools and the expertise that would allow them to do a bigger job, a job from start to finish. Right? Think about digital co-pilots that coach people as they do the work. So again, technology has like both sides, right? It can make work harder, and a lot of systems are fairly inflexible and actually perpetuate. It's like a very fragmented work design, but it also, I think, has the opportunity to allow people to do a bigger job. It really depends on how you utilize it.
That's really what it's all about, right? How you implement anything is going to affect the outcome.
Yeah, and that's also, I think, an important point for work design, right? This is, we talked initially about the manager's designer of the work. And I think that's certainly true to a certain degree, but it's also important, I think, for the managers to involve those impacted by those decisions in the work design. And so it's probably more like a co-design process where the leader really creates the conditions, I think, for people to take ownership of the work and shape the work. The example I oftentimes use is, right, nobody in the history of rental cars has ever washed a rental car before returning it. And so, right, why would we expect employees to take ownership of the work when they didn't have a hand in shaping it?
And just to double down even further, I mean, we know the vast majority, according to Gartner and others, up to 75 or 80% of digital transformations fail. And so often, why do they fail? Why do we continue to want to automate bad processes or processes that are suboptimal? For firms that would, take their kind of mechanistic view and think about redesigning the job and then applying technology to bring the benefit of that humanistic perspective, the benefit of an enhanced work design, will get so much more out of any technology investment.
Oh, so we're doing it backward.
Yeah. In so many instances, we're doing it backwards because we automate existing, poorly designed processes.
Right. Right. Boy, I'd never thought of that either. That's really interesting. So if someone's listening, are there telltale signs? Like, how do they know? What are the symptoms of a broken work environment?
There's a couple. High turnover, low levels of engagement, low customer satisfaction. Mm-hmm. In general, like lagging productivity. And when things go wrong, it's really hard to pin down who is accountable for it.
Ah, that's an interesting perspective.
You know, I'll just add to that. You know, this idea about meaning is really important. You know, the author, Antoine Saint-Exupéry, who wrote The Little Prince, he said, if you want to build a ship, don't drum up people to collect wood and just give them tasks, but rather teach them to long for the endless immensity of the sea. This idea of understanding what's the purpose of work? Why are we here? Why are we doing this? Mm-hmm. And can I own it, to the point about the rental car? Does it feel like my car? Am I willing to take care of this? Do I feel like I'm a part of it? Can I see myself in it? It makes such a big difference.
Yeah, you know, I think that is so key. And I feel like these younger generations, that's what they're all about, doing something with purpose, knowing that they're contributing to something that is bigger than they are. Are you finding that you're getting that sort of feedback from younger generations, or are they just going and leaving these companies and, I don't know, engaging in the gig economy?
Yeah, I think there's a generational aspect to it, right? I think as you rightfully pointed out, I think Gen Z and so forth, I think is much less likely to stay in a job for 2 or 3 years, right? Out of concern that they might have a gap in the resume or somebody might not like the short tenure that they have. But you can actually see, right, the effect of poor work design across all generations, right? People who are in their 50s, I think, have the same desire to do something meaningful, maybe even more, right? Because they have less time available to them. Yeah. So I think those factors that David mentioned, autonomy, purpose, right? Developing mastery, I think they're universal human needs. So I think that generation independent, but I think younger generations are less likely to put up with it as maybe, right, you and I would have in the past.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. So what sort of workplace trends are you seeing moving forward? Are things changing, and how so?
Go ahead, David.
I was just going to say, this is a trend in different ways, but many firms, go away from the entrepreneurial spirit, the innovation that birthed them to begin with. You know, the status quo can be so magnetic, pulling you away from improving. And, I think with all of the emphasis nowadays on employee engagement, it was quiet quitting and it was, the great resignation for a period of time. And I think, as you mentioned, we've got more generations in the workplace now than ever before.
Right.
The impetus to make quick outcomes, to drive progress, and not to lead with one's chin. Which is why this approach has been around for decades and decades. It's just it's one of the things whose time has come in a variety of ways.
Yeah, I think you asked about workplace trends. I think the workplace kind of splits into two worlds, right? And I think it goes back to Douglas McGregor's theory X and theory Y. Right? Theory X, right? We believe that people are lazy and stupid, and right, we got to have incentives, and we got to really control them to make sure that the work gets done. Whereas theory Y, right, that assumes that, right, people are intrinsically motivated and want to contribute to something bigger than themselves. And I think whichever side of this equation the leader falls, I think that determines what's possible as work design. If we look at people as expendable, as people that just transact and can be easily replaced, I think it's unlikely that a leader will invest in work design. But I think we see more and more indications that leaders realize that, like, the old tricks don't work that well anymore. So we got to find a different answer. And I think it's kind of ironic that we have to go back to things that we've known for the last 60 and 65 years, and that have been confirmed in study after study after study, that when we design work to deliver on intrinsic motivation, right, wonderful things happen in the workplace. So I think we really see the separation out. I think there's still a lot of leaders out there that are unwilling to let go of direct control. And I think if you're not willing to do that, work design, I think, is a very difficult approach to implement.
And you really can start small. I mean, there's ways in terms of, not leading with your chin. You really can experiment your way forward, because everybody wants quick wins and value, sort of expedient value realization. This approach will pay dividends quickly.
Yeah, that's nice as well. You mentioned, Thomas, you mentioned that just a minute ago that this way of working has been around for, you know, a mighty long time, and we got away from it. And you might have said this before, but I'm going to ask this question. What propelled us to get away from it? I mean, if it was working, why did we change the way we work? Was it industrialization? So, what was it?
This approach was very popular in the 80s and early 90s. But I think what happened in the early 90s is that technology really started to dominate, right, in the workplace, whether that's like the right early ERP systems and later on digital transformation. And I think for the last 3 or 4 decades, we have seen like wave after wave of technology. And the lure of technology, I think, is irresistible for a lot of leaders, because dealing with people and making that change towards motivational work design, I think, is, I think, not an easy task, right? I think, right, humans, I think, are not easy to change. So I think oftentimes leaders, I think, looking for the quick fix and yeah, maybe technology, if we automate the task, right, that's going to solve the problem. So I think we've been on this technology bandwagon now for 3-4 decades, and we haven't seen the productivity gains that were promised, but we keep trying again and again, hoping for a different outcome.
Yeah, I think Thomas really hit it. You know, it's a much older quote, but Henry Ford said, you know, I need a pair of hands. Why is it that a head comes along with it? you know, it's much easier to deal with work kind of in a mechanistic way, you know, to look at a process and just say, look, just people just do this, right? You know, be the automaton. It's what we need. It's much harder to dial back and say, look, let's actually look at this. There's human beings in the equation. Let's try to bring the alignment of the employee themselves, the work itself, and the customer. Let's bring all of that into frame, create the level of visibility, create the shared understanding of meaning, the purpose, and have the activity, have the transparency and the direct feedback to be able to then apply technology constructively. So it's harder to do, but it's easier to get started and to get it done right nowadays than it ever has been before.
That's so interesting. I love this. I think this is so great. And so tell me more about the book, Fixing Work, and what the reader gets out of it.
So the book is a fable. It tells the story of a typical middle manager in a large insurance company. And it starts off with him having a really bad day. Right? Another employee quits. He's falling behind on his deliverables. Right? The customers are unhappy. And by a chance encounter, he meets an old college classmate that introduces him to this basic idea that work is a product, employees are the customer of it, and work, if designed well, can really make a difference here. And so the hero of the story, Jerry, goes on this journey to start implementing these ideas. And so we see it's like the story unfold in real time. And it's like a typical change effort. Some things work, some things don't work. The antibodies in the organization come out. But at the end, obviously, there's a happy ending and success. But we wanted to really tell a realistic story that really, I think, allows the reader to see themselves in the hero of the story and hopefully see a path for how these ideas can be applied in their own organization.
Yeah, and it's been great to get feedback that, you know, these are characters that folks care about, you know, circumstances they can relate to, in ways that hopefully make it easier to emulate and to learn from.
That's terrific. Thank you so much for joining me and sharing this information with the listeners and for writing the book. So will you tell the listeners how they can find you and where they can get the book, please?
Yeah, I think the website for the book is fixing-work.com, like the title of the book. And I think on that site, you can find the contact information for David and for myself, as well as a link to a podcast and articles and so forth to learn more about the book.
Excellent. Thank you. As I said, I really appreciate the conversation. I think this is really important, and the timing is, you know, unfortunately not been better. leaders really need to start rethinking these things. So thank you for joining me. And listeners, thank you. You are who we're doing this for. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Accelerate Your Business Growth, a production of Evergreen Podcasts. Discover more episodes of this podcast and explore others at evergreenpodcast.com. As always, continue to prosper and be curious. And if you're looking to get your sales strategy headed in the right direction, pick up a copy of Succeed Without Selling on Amazon or wherever books are sold. Until we meet again on another episode of Accelerate Your Business Growth, goodbye and good day. Don't you know that you're a
grown-up? I'm a grown-up.
Me too.
Yep, me too. But you know, these days, being a grown-up can really suck.
Luckily, we're grown-ups who grew up in the coolest generation.
We had video arcades.
And also some of the best TV and movies ever made.
We lived the origin of awesome consumer electronics. The list goes on and on.
Yep, Generation X.
Exactly.
And we're Gen X Grown-Up.
Every week, the Gen X Grown-Up podcast explores media, tech, toys, games, and more from both yesterday and today.
Through the eyes of Generation Xers who absolutely love that stuff. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or find us on our website, genxgrownup.com. Life sucks as a grown-up. All right, you think that was good enough?
I hope so, man. I'm tired.
Who listens to a promo on a podcast and then goes and listens to a different podcast?
Right. I've never done it. So, no, right.